This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In states that haven't legalized, the drug trade goes on as it always has. Here in New York, a legalization bill failed recently, but people are still expecting the change to come sooner or later. And so entrepreneurs are racing to get a foothold in the market before legalization. Jelani Cobb, who's a staff writer at The New Yorker, has been looking into this nascent cannabis economy, who's benefiting and who's not.
Recently, I went to visit a man I'm going to call L. He lives in Brooklyn, and he sells some pretty high-end items.
This is spreadable chocolate, so it's like a chocolate version of Nutella, vegan also. Right, these are our skin creams. One is THC, one is CBD. Right, these are THC brownies, lollipops. So this one here is a vegan soursop sorbet. It has 165 milligrams of CBD.
Elle makes his own cannabis products, puttering around his kitchen and whipping up these concoctions. He has them on like a display case right when you walk in the door.
This is CBD isolate, so pure CBD in its purest form.
He's showing me a jar of what looks like white powder.
When I get those, I get them delivered because I'm scared to walk around with a white powder.
Jelani, who are his customers?
He told me it's a bit of everybody. The neighborhood is racially diverse, and like much of Brooklyn, it's changed a bit over the years.
I feel like when the white presence came into the neighborhood that it made it more acceptable because they're way braver actually smoking outside than any of us would have been in the past. So it kind of normalized it overall, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Well, I started noticing it in the city. Like, I'd be walking through the city. Like, I worked at a hospital for about 20 years here in the city, and I would be walking to and from work and, you know, getting off the train. I would just smell it in the air everywhere, and then it became such, like, a normal thing. And then it became to where it's just everywhere you go now, you smell it everywhere, like, all over New York. It's amazing.
Have you ever gotten in trouble for selling pot?
I was pulled over about a year ago. The cops said that I had a broken windshield and my taillight was out. So I guess they saw the front and the back of my car at the same time. But they pulled me over. The guy gets out the car. He's walking up to my car and he's going just like this. He's like waving his, fanning his hand in front of his face. He's like, "What are you smoking in there?" I'm like, "I'm not smoking anything in here." Right? He's like, "I smell it. You're smoking." I said, "Sir, I haven't smoked since 12 o'clock this afternoon. Mind you, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm just getting out of work at the bar." Right? So he was like, "You're smoking in here. I'm going to find it." Right? Get out the car, go stand in the back. So there was three officers in the car, three undercover officers. The other two stood there with me while he went through my car. He found a few bags of weed behind my seat. I had some cartridges, some oils in it, and they locked me up for that.
The officers arrested L. And he faced up to 9 years in prison.
9 years? That's a lot of time.
Yeah. L got lucky. He found some good lawyers and pleaded the charges down to a violation. But the police still confiscated all the cash he had on him at the time, which was about $1,500. And here's a fact about New York. 20 years ago, black people were about 5 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana than white people. They're now 8 times more likely.
Even though they use it basically the same rates.
Exactly.
I always used to say, right, that if you go to like a small suburban town and a white teenager is found smoking weed, they'll be brought home to their parents, dropped off. I caught him smoking weed. I'll have the talk with him. That will be that. You catch a 13, 14-year-old out here smoking weed, right, their life can change.
If weed is legalized in New York State, what would you like to see in that legislation?
First thing I would like to see is that the people, the nonviolent people who are in jail because of it, get released. That would be number one. before we move forward, we have to get those people out of there, like get them back to their families, get them back into society to try to get a good footing in life to be able to maybe be a part of this change, you know? And those people, I cry for them, man. Like, I sit back and I think of just how many people have done so many years.
So why risk selling now? Why not just wait until it's legal?
While we're waiting, huge corporations are getting their stuff in order, putting all their eggs in the basket, you know, working on their packaging, their how they're going to come to the market. If we don't have that same freedom, how is it fair?
So Al would likely go to prison if he's caught selling his cannabis chocolate and sorbet. But on the other hand, he wants to build his business to give himself a chance against big weed once marijuana is legalized in New York.
Jelani, how did you start exploring this?
Well, there's an interesting background in that I am in that probably minority demographic of people my age who have no experience with marijuana whatsoever.
Not one time.
Not once.
It was just a matter of not inhaling or...
Not even getting into the room to inhale. So
fair enough.
But I heard about this issue from my friend Mary Pryor. Mary has Crohn's disease, and she uses cannabis medicinally. And she moved to L.A. to get better access to it and developed friendships with some other Black women who were also interested in cannabis. And right away, she noticed something.
We already saw that there was a huge gap of Black and brown access in L.A. specifically that we experienced. So even when I would go to dispensaries, I would be like, okay, there's no Black butt tenders here, and I'm in Inglewood. That's interesting.
Mary started going to cannabis events trying to learn more about the business.
So we would be maybe, we would be 3 out of 7 Black people at a festival of hundreds, and it was all like white people. And we were sitting at this table looking at the room like, wow, they really don't want us in here.
So the big issue that Mary is raising here is that people of color suffered from the criminalization of marijuana for all these years. But now, under legalization or potential legalization, the people who will benefit will be white, or that's the fear.
Right. I mean, millions and millions of people have gotten arrested for using this drug, mostly people of color. And that's why there's a lot of conversation as legalization bills are being passed about social equity.
Can you define social equity in this context?
Well, it can mean a lot of things. It can mean releasing people who have low-level drug convictions from prison. And in a lot of cases, these bills actually wipe those charges off their records altogether. It can mean using tax revenue to rejuvenate communities that were hit by the war on drugs. And then there's this interesting program in Oakland, which was started in 2016. It's called the Equity Program. One of the beneficiaries of that was a man by the name of Tucky Blunt.
Everybody I knew growing up pretty much went to jail, you know what I mean, for different drug crimes, but in most cases, it was weed for a lot of time. I know people did federal time for growing cannabis. So all over Oakland, it was pretty rampant, people going to jail for cannabis.
Tucky grew up in Oakland, and in 2004, he was arrested for $80 worth of marijuana in his pocket. He spent a little time in jail and moved on.
2017, I received a phone call from a good friend of mine named Michael Marshall, who is the voice of the song I Got Five on It. He called me and simply said, "Hey, Fonz, you ever caught a case in Oakland for weed?" And I'm like, "Yeah, why?"
What happened is that Oakland's equity bill said that half of all cannabis business permits had to go to people like him, who were personally affected by the war on drugs.
And he explained to me about the program and some people he knew that were looking for an Oakland resident to help them apply for the business license. And I was like, all right, cool. Let me go talk to them, see what they want from me. And kind of like the rest is history, like literally.
So what happened next?
Mind you, I found out about this in November of 17. We had to turn our application in December of 17. And then we won the lottery January of 18. So this happened like super duper fast. And it was a lottery. You had to pick a bingo ball, throw it in a chamber. They rolled the ball, the chamber around. And if they didn't pick your ball, the last 4 balls won a dispensary. And that's how we won.
And tell me what you did with that license.
All right, so Blunts and More is the first brick and mortar cannabis store, recreational and medicinal, ever owned and operated by a person formerly incarcerated for cannabis. It's in Oakland, California, directly across the street from the Alameda Oakland Coliseum. I'm from Oakland, born and raised. And for me to be able to sell cannabis legally in the city I grew up in and went to jail for selling it illegally is just a rite of passage that I didn't even know was coming. And it's represented all through Blunts and More, our staff, just our lobby area. It just shows that we are black in cannabis and, you know, we rep it real well.
So this is a guy who, in the end, made good.
Yeah, but he's the only one. Oakland's program was designed to give black and other people of color residents a stake in the market, and that's turned out to be much easier said than done. So what are the obstacles that you and other equity applicants face?
Honestly and truthfully, I believe it's from lack of funding and lack of education, in the sense of we should have got the license and had education right away, because that's how quick the vultures was waiting on us. Then you run into funding issues because there was no money available at the time for the applicants. You just had the license. So now you got to go find somewhere to rent. And then you also run into real estate, people gouging. Normal real estate for commercial space is maybe 75 cents to a dollar in California. But most people, when they find out you're doing cannabis or anything related to cannabis, they're asking for upwards of $4 to $6 a square foot. And you have to pay all of this rent, get all your stuff, all of your staff, all of your equipment before you can even get your license. So you're paying all this. Where are you getting this money from if you're poor?
Mm-hmm. Did anyone ever try to buy your license from you?
Oh, yeah. I got offered the highest offer I got was about $3 million. And it was from one of the guys who ended up getting somebody else to sell to him, which is okay. You have the right to do that. You know what I mean? But what did you get out of it? You know what I mean? I'm hearing that one of them may have been offered $100,000 and $10 million in future stock options. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. That's not going to change your kid's life, your kid's kid's life. If you want to be signed off, you should get a good amount of money. You know what I mean? In my opinion, upwards of at least $10 to $15 million minimum. But everybody doesn't think like me.
Wow. So a few million dollars did not seem to impress him all that much.
Right.
These dispensary permits are worth a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah. Managed correctly, these could be really big business.
So, Jelani, you've reported on the issue. You're talking to people about the problems. What do you want to see happen? How do we legalize marijuana fairly, taking into account the damage that's been done all these many years in the war on drugs?
Well, it's complicated. What seems clear is that the remedies need to be as extensive as the problem itself. It's not enough to decriminalize or even legalize cannabis if you don't also void convictions and expunge records.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, it seems that even granting licenses to people of color who are affected by the war on drugs will ultimately be more symbolic than effective unless it's also paired with concrete steps and resources to actually get those businesses off the ground. So it's not inconceivable that these cities would also provide seed money, you know, no terrible pun intended. Beyond that, it seems that revenue from the taxes on this product in particular could be directed into other remedial efforts. And, you know, the dispensaries are just one small part in a much bigger production chain. And the people who I've talked to who think about this a lot are really very invested in seeing people of color have positions in equity throughout the entire system. So they are growers, they are marketers, and they want to be in on every level of it. And while there's a lot to be done, it does seem that you can see maybe that there are some steps being taken in the right direction.
Jelani Cobb, thank you.
Thank you.
Staff writer Jelani Cobb, and you can read everything he's written for us at newyorker.com.